We're continuing in the 16th chapter of Ezekiel, and we're ready to begin in the 15th verse. In this part of the chapter, we have an account given of the great wickedness of the people of Israel, especially talking about their idol worship. And this is very provoking to God in view of the fact that he had conferred such great favors upon this people. What we have here is the picture of a beautiful maid who had been, as a babe, cast out into the field to ruin. No one to love or to care or to pity her. And then God, having rescued her, done great favors for her, been a kind friend and a benefactor, and in all respects had acted to her as a father and as a husband. And this maid then turning to adultery, to fornication, to harlotry. And as he refers to this harlotry, as he refers to the fact that she had been committing spiritual adultery, he's really talking about the sin of idolatry. Idolatry was a great and provoking sin, and they were certainly guilty of it, and it seems that in its true mature form, this began in the latter end of Solomon's time. And as we studied from Samuel's time until the end of Solomon's time, we do not really read much about their idolatry. And from that time forward, though, it continued to be more or less the crying sin of the nation. It was the thing that brought them to their true downfall. And they continued in it until the captivity. And although now and then some of the reforming kings tried to check the idolatry, it was never totally suppressed. And for the most part, it continued to be a very prominent, outstanding sin against God. They not only worshiped the true God by images, such as the 10 tribes had when they used the calves at Dan and at Bethel, but they also worshiped false gods, such as Baal and Moloch. And they seem to have worshipped all the senseless rabble of the pagan deities. Now, God represents this idolatrous practice under the figure of whoredom and adultery. One, because it is the violation of a marriage covenant with God. It is the forsaking of Him and the embracing the bosom of a stranger. It is giving that affection and that service that should go to God to his rivals, a service which is due to God alone. Also, because it is the corrupting and defiling of the mind and the enslaving of the spiritual part of a man. It is the subjecting of man's mind to the power and dominion of sensual things, such as whoredom is. Another reason idolatry is like spiritual adultery and whoredom is because it ruins the conscience. It sears and hardens the conscience. And so those who engage in idolatry, after a while, have no feeling about it. It doesn't bother them to do it quite openly. And they have no regard for the fact that this is a great sin against the true and the living God. And they willingly take the truth of God and turn it into a lie. They take His glory and turn it into a shame. And it is such a besetting sin. It so dishonors the human nature with such vile affections that God has to give man over to a reprobate mind. And it is of such an insidious nature that men seldom recover themselves out of its snare once they've been totally given up to it. It is a shameful, scandalous sin for those who join themselves to the Lord to then join themselves to an idol. So God has very just reason to compare this sin, the sin that Israel was guilty of, to be like whoredom and adultery. So now let us move into the 15th verse. He begins his 15th verse by a phrase that is one of the causes of this sin of idolatry. How could someone who had had such a close harmony and union with God turn to idols? How could this beauty, this young virgin, this pure woman who had been espoused to her God, how could she turn away to then the sin of spiritual adultery, which idolatry is? He says in the 15th verse, "But thou didst trust in thine own beauty." Now this is one of the causes. There are several causes given in this chapter, but one of the causes of the sin of idolatry is that thou didst trust in thine own beauty. She began to think that her beauty was enough for her. She didn't need God anymore. Her beauty was so important that she could not allow any to think that she wasn't beautiful, that she wasn't available, that she wasn't someone that would embrace their affections. She did not want to thwart anybody. Her beauty was the most important thing in all the world to her. And so rather than to thwart another God, rather than to put off another lover, she allowed the lover to come in. She embraced it. She took it in. And certainly, we can find ourselves in that very same position today. We want to have the high acclaim of those round about us. We are under such a tremendous amount of peer pressure. So we think. So we allow ourselves to be. That we yield, we give in to their desires, to their notions, to their ideas, to their traditions. And we embrace those things ourselves so as to not be offensive, so that we will continue to be beautiful, so that we will continue to be desirable, so that people will like our company. And that's what happened here to Israel. Thou didst trust in thine own beauty. They left God out. They stopped trusting in God. They stopped depending upon the things of God. They stopped having a high honor and respect for God, and they had more thought for their own beauty, for their own feelings, and for how people were going to regard them than for how God was going to regard them. When you begin to think more of how people think about you than you do about how God thinks about you, you're on the road to ruin right then. So thou didst trust in thine own beauty and playedst the harlot because of thy renown. Because they had a reputation. Because they had a name for being desirable. They didn't want anyone to think that this wasn't so, that this wasn't true. We see this today in actual literal practice. For example, in our high schools, we'll have a young lady that is beautiful, that's desirable, and she has favors given to her, she has a lot of compliments given to her, and yet when she has the offer to commit the sin of fornication, she feels she can't afford to turn this down because others may feel that she is not really as desirable as they claim she is. And so she gives in. She yields to the sin of fornication. And this is the first step toward ruin. And that's what happens here in the spiritual sense. We must not allow ourselves to be in such a position that we're afraid we're going to be offensive to somebody because we stand up for the things of God. We must stand for the things of God. We must not allow idolatry to end in our lives. We must not condone it. We must not practice it. We must not make God share with it. So he says, "You played the harlot because of thy renown, and pouredst out thy fornication on every one that passed by." His it was. So now he begins to talk about some of the particulars of this sin of idolatry that they were guilty of. And he describes it here as playing the harlot, and pouredst out thy fornication on everyone that passed by. His it was. They didn't let anything go by. Any kind of an idolatrous sin, any kind of a deity that somebody regarded as being holy, that somebody regarded as having some kind of spiritual power or significance, they took it in. They gave it credence. They did not reject it. They did not condemn it. They did not destroy it. They allowed it to exist with them. Now, you know, we see that very same frame of mind so commonly today. People will say, well, it just doesn't matter what God you worship, just so long as you believe in some kind of a higher being. People would say, well, the main thing is that you have this feeling in your heart about God. People will say, well, there's good people in all churches. It just doesn't matter. Good people in all churches. It doesn't matter what the practice is, what the doctrine is. It doesn't matter what kind of a worship they try to concoct. That is not important. Just the fact that you do believe in something. We cannot afford to have that attitude today. We cannot afford to pour out fornications on everyone that passed by. We must be discriminatory in what we worship and how we worship. We cannot worship just any and everything, any and every way. God does not allow this. This is forcing God to share with idolatry. And just because some high learned man has dreamed this up, he's began to practice it in the depths of his imagination. Just because he has some followers, maybe a lot of followers, just because they have some political clout, maybe they have a lot of financial power, maybe they have a convincing argument. If it's contrary to what God wants, we cannot embrace it. We cannot commit fornication with it. We cannot have any part of it. But Israel wasn't this way. Israel poured out their fornication on everyone that passed by. His it was. They allowed themselves to be used. They allowed themselves to be the vehicle for these idolatrous thoughts and practices for these other gods. And this is the way God viewed this. God, you can see, then, would have such a detestable feeling for this people. Here, this was his bride. This was his wife. And yet, everyone that passed by, she took them in. His it was. She allowed her beauty, her affections, her energies to be spent on others besides God. Then in verse 16, he gives another particular of this. And of thy garments thou didst take, and deckedest thy high places with divers colors, and played the harlot thereon. Now, the very thing that God had given them to wear, his garments that he gave to her, the gifts that he bestowed upon her, the valuables that he purchased and allowed her to have, she took these and decked the high places with them. She took these and decorated her places of worship and played the harlot thereupon. And here again we find that today, man will take the things of God, the holy things that God intends for man to use today in worship to him, he'll take those things and he'll turn them in then to the places where idols are worshipped. He will take the things of God and so pollute them with idolatrous practices, with the traditions that he's received from other men, with practices that have been born out of pure paganism that have no Bible basis whatsoever for their even existing. He'll take those things and he'll mix them in with the things of God. So that man then becomes corrupted and so polluted until somehow or other he finds himself hiding Easter eggs and finding those Easter eggs, and somehow this is a symbol of the resurrection of Christ. The Easter bunny somehow figures into his religion. Churches will have Halloween parties where they carry out these ritualistic things that are so paganistic that they derived themselves from the Druids and way back in times past, and they even become to believe that maybe witches and spirits are going to come out on that night, and they go through all the ritualistic things of this. Churches condone this. Churches perpetuate it. It's in our schools. All the things that God has given us, we take and we deck these idolatrous practices with those things and force God to accept them or to reject us. So he says, thou deckedest thy high places with divers colors and playedest the harlot thereon. The like thing shall not come, neither shall it be so. God's never going to approve of this. He'll never condone it. He'll never allow it to go by unchecked. He said it's not going to come, and neither shall it be so. He's not going to approve of it. And this could also say that nothing this bad is ever going to come along again, or nothing any worse than this will ever happen. This is as bad as you can get. And he further elaborates on this in verse 17 by saying, thou hast also taken thy fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I had given thee, and madest to thyself images of men, and didst commit whoredom with them. So they took the gold and silver that God had given them, And they made images of these things, and they committed whoredom with them. Now we have to remember that all the things that we have in the way of material possessions are things that God has given us. We're not free to just use these things any way that we want to. This is the gold and silver that God has given us. These possessions are things that God has allowed us to have. And if we take them and use them in the wrong way, if we use them to perpetuate something that God does not approve of, God does not condone, God does not want us to be participant in, then we're taking the things of God and actually making to ourselves images of men. And he says, thou didst commit whoredom with them. Verse 18, and tookest thy broidered garments and coveredest them. And so the garments that God has given us, things that we're used to clothe ourselves spiritually, the things that God has given us to enhance ourselves spiritually, our minds, our wills, the work of our hands, our higher innate abilities, these gifts that God has given us, these talents that we have, we take them and embellish idols with them. We take them and cover the idols with them. You know, some of the greatest music ever written in the eyes of the world is music that is to idolatrous purposes and ends. Some of the greatest artwork that's ever been done is really artwork that is made to depict some kind of idolatrous practices. We think of the great abilities of societies and nations that have long since ceased to be, such as the Incas, such as the Egyptians, such as some of the great rulers in places like China. And we go back and dig up their relics, and we see that a great part of their energies went into creating idols. Whatever abilities God has given, thy broidered garments, we take those things and we embellish the idols with them. He says, thou hast set mine oil and mine incense before them. The very things that God has given us for worship, we take those things and we pollute them with idols. We mix in the paganistic practices of the world with them. And we force God, if he's going to have anything to do with us, he must also have to do with them. And he further elaborates on this in verse 19. My meat also, which I gave thee, fine flour and oil and honey, wherewith I fed thee, thou hast even set it before them for a sweet savor. And thus it was, saith the Lord God. So all the things that God has given us for us to use for our benefit and for his benefit, for us to use as we worship him and serve him, we've taken these things and set them before the idol. The very idea of a person using his mind and his thoughts and his energy to perpetuate idolatry. For a person to use the beautiful voice that God has given them to sing with, to sing things that are so abominable to God. Things that would perpetuate such things as the drug culture, or that would perpetuate such ideas as committing illicit sexual sins, or would perpetuate ideas of drunkenness and debauchery and unfaithfulness. But man uses these abilities that God has given him, and they use them in that direction. It's as though we had taken the oil and the flour and the honey that God's given us to eat with, and we feed the idols with it. And we commit then whoredom as we do so. He says, thus it was, saith the Lord God. Then in verse 20, he gives another area in which they had so terribly abused themselves. He says, moreover, thou hast taken thy sons and thy daughters, whom thou hast born unto me, and these hast thou sacrificed unto them to be devoured. Now, the sons and the daughters that God has given unto us actually should be God's sons and daughters. We should do all that we can to mold them into the servants of God and to have an appreciation and a love for the true and the living God. But yet they took these sons and daughters and they'd sacrificed them to be devoured. Now, this could mean several things. It could mean that they had given them over to the idolatrous practices in which they had perpetuated the thoughts and the ideas of idolatry in their minds, and how much we do this today when we take such paganistic practices such as the Christ Mass and we instill into the minds of our little children the ideas of Santa Claus. We instill in them the ideas of the Christmas tree and the hanging of the mistletoe and all those traditions that go along with it, the holly wreath, the Yule log, you name it, and all these things come from paganism and idolatry. And so we ingrain this into the minds of our little babies, our little children, from the very first time they can understand anything on up. And so what we're doing here is we're taking the sons and the daughters that God has given to us, and we're sacrificing them to be devoured. And he says, is this of thy whoredoms a small matter? They thought this was a laughing matter. They thought this was something real nice and real neat. They could joke about it, and they got a big thrill out of it. They loved to do it, just as man loves to do this today. But he reminds them, is this a small matter? Is there anything small about this? This is a horrible sin. This is something that you're taking my daughters, you're taking, as he calls them in the next verse, my children, and you're turning them into worshipers of idols. You're letting them commit the same grievous sins that you commit. And to God, this is a great matter. God is most concerned about this. God is upset about this. And so he brands this as one of the things that is a sin that he's not going to tolerate. He's not going to allow it to continue. He's going to bring about their ruin, their destruction because of this type of thing. And so we need to take very careful note today as to how we behave in this respect. Well, just as God wouldn't tolerate this type of sin then, even so today, he equally abhors it and will not tolerate it today. Well, our time is about expired for this portion of our study, so we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.